Good morning. My name is Sharon. I'm an alcoholic. And it's, what time is it, Scott? LA time? I'm not sure. But you know what? The beautiful part is I can't lie this early, so there you go, you know? I have a lot of people in this room that that I've watched on their journey and that I am deeply involved with because my heart is involved with their heart. And this is the language of the heart. And it started last night, and I'm just opened up. And I love to be around people who love AA and love God. There's nothing better. That's where I want to live, in the middle of you. And so I'm here to talk about step three. I want to thank the Miracle Group for what's such a great Thursday night with all of you. And it was, I think it's Einstein that says we can live each day as if nothing's a miracle or if everything's a miracle. And I mean, how joyous was it for me to speak at the Miracle Group on our 40th birthday? Because I got sober in the womb, just so you know. But I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I know that my friend Sandy used to talk about that. The book is the treasure map, and everybody gets to follow the treasure map and find their treasure, which is a spiritual awakening. And he taught us all how to become a little bit more awake and how awake he wanted to get. And then I wear the little thing that says, let me be the least disturbed person in the room, which reminds me all the time, I've got to be the least disturbed person in the room much of the time. And that reliance is on God today. And it didn't start that way. I was a little girl in Iowa. I believed that my God, I knew the catechism. God is love. God is love. And then I kind of started seeing the atrocities in the world. One of my best friend's brother, they had a fire at their house in the middle of winter, in the middle of Iowa, in the middle of the country. And they couldn't get to him. And the volunteer fire trucks took forever to get out there. And I remember that, and I just thought, how could God let my friend's little brother, who was screaming in the house, they couldn't get to him. It was just, I started to get just very, very alert to all of the craziness in the world when I was young, and I was ultra sensitive. So I needed a drink early on. And thank God my dad comes from a Czech background, so they had a lot of weekend weddings, weekend funerals. There was always polka, and the beer barrel polka was going, and they were drinking, and there was all, I mean, everything was a party. And then, you know, they built that house for those people again. They went and built that house, and that was a summer party going on all the time. And so I had that, and I had a loving family, but yet I started to see what was happening with, why is God letting this happen? And I would ask people, and they would just go, oh, don't worry about it, or someday it'll make sense, or you're too sensitive. And grandpa and grandma, I would start crying about a block out away from them because I had to go back and give them another hug because they're going to die. They're going to die. And I was the one at funerals who just, I couldn't sleep after funerals, or, you know, Aunt Till, I touched her hand and it was like, oh my God. And so my mother said, you don't have to go anymore. You know, I would smell the flowers for days. I was ultra sensitive to, what does it all mean? What does it all mean? So I started to really question God, and then I started to read about UFOs, and I thought, well, that's it. That's it. So I began looking for the mothership early on. And when I drank, I found the mothership. You know, I was a little obsessed with Gandhi until I found out he was assassinated, and it was like, okay, I don't think I'm going to do that. And because my mother wouldn't let me fast in Iowa, you don't fast, you know. And when I found, you know, why go to India? Drink some Canadian Club. Thank you, Canada. You know, have some tequila. That's psychedelic. I was looking for truth early on, but I was questioning God a lot. Oh, and other things had happened that I didn't understand, and And it was the 60s, so my alcoholism wasn't just say no, it was just say thanks. So my alcoholism flourished. It was my liquid spiritual experience, and it didn't do that for Marianne next to me or Jeanette Andrews next to me, but it did it for me. And it became, I pushed everything aside, including my love for God and God's love for me, for King Alcohol to work in my life, and to be my partner, my running partner. And King Alcohol did work in my life. Long time, for me anyway. By the time I was in my early 20s, life was over with my family. There was no art school. There was no love of a man. There was no... I was running alone. I pushed that across the bar so alcohol would stay in my life because, you know, it asked for it. It asked for it. And I had no idea that... I was self-sufficient, independent. I'm not hurting anyone but me. Leave me alone. You know, I thought I knew about peace and freedom. No ideas. I was angry and upset. But my God was alcohol. And it allowed me to leave that loving family. It allowed me to not look in my dad's eyes because I hurt him so. It allowed me to not... No, I just knew my mother because she was one of those mothers that had the radio on in case the tornado was coming. You know, she always had the WMT. It was always there by her in case there was a weather alert. You know, it made a noise, and so then we were all in the basement with the cat and the dog waiting for the tornado. You know, at 3 a.m. And once one went over too, so it was like, "Thank you, Mom." So I knew she laid awake at night and wondered where her daughter was. I knew she laid awake at night and didn't know where I was. And my dad, too, but my dad had to shut it off. I had a big fight with a Catholic priest at the American Martyrs Church in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, because I started talking politics. Because I was real good at goading you. I was real good at letting you show me your worst. And then I could point at you and go, "What a hypocrite you are. Look at you." And so he was yelling at me, and I was yelling at him, and everybody that was standing there waiting to go into confession were like against the wall going, "Oh my God, what'd she do?" You know, it's like, ugh. And that was it. I'm not gonna go in that Catholic church again. See you, God. My one-fingered peace sign. I'm out of here. Where's my backpack? You know? So that's where I was. Little did I know I was going to be have a moment of grace in my life on August 20th, 1975, where this broken spirit with her broken jaw and her broken nose and her broken head, which had a concussion, and her broken shoes and her broken life, was going to sit on the steps of the Duck Pond Liquor Store in West Los Angeles on my way to Hawaii, because it was going to be different there. I kind of ran into some people that were a little bigger than me and a little meaner than me, and I didn't fight. That was one of my awakenings. I remember not much about that evening, but I do remember thinking, "Who the hell cares?" And I didn't fight back, and I'm a survivor. I'm a hitchhiker. I'm a survivor. But I didn't fight back that night. I didn't care anymore. And so there I was on my way to Hawaii, but not quite making it, sitting above a liquor store drinking cheap wine through the hole that had been created by kicking my teeth out there, because I'm a drinker. But there was no more life in it. I was so tired. I was blessedly just so tired. And I called my mother, and my mother said, "Sharon, I can't help you go to the Salvation Army." And my mother didn't know for 2 nights if her daughter was going to be okay, because she didn't know what hospital I was in. She had gotten a phone call, but they neglected to tell her where. And my mother said no. And I called somebody, because the phone number was there, dating the guy I was staying with, who had told me I had to leave that day because I depressed him. Yeah, I was depressing myself. And she said she couldn't help me that day because she was not sober that day. I didn't know I was calling an in-and-out member of Alcoholics Anonymous, but her phone number was there. And she had me call a stranger, and I called a stranger. I don't do that. I don't call a stranger. I'm self-sufficient. I have everything I need here in my backpack. My book, Be Here Now, by Baba Ram Dass. I've got my spare clothes. I've got my bottle. Maybe I have a dog at my heels, if he didn't hear what happened to the last dog. Had my chance to make amends to the animal kingdom many, many times. And there I was, sitting there with this stranger that said, put your drink down, put your joint down, and sit in the steps. She knew exactly where I was. I couldn't talk the first 3 months in AA, so I learned to listen. I was wired shut. But she could tell what I had said. She knew the Duck Pond liquor store, because it was an alcoholic liquor store. Looked the other way when it was after hours. And this car of two beautiful women got out, and I thought, no, not going anywhere with them. But I was tired, and they picked me up and put me in the back of a Volkswagen where I couldn't get out, and I ended up at this church, and I thought, here we go. Me and God, we're not talking. I don't want God to know where I am. I don't even think about God. I mean, I am a crisis Christian. If I'm face down in the palmetto bushes outside of Pensacola, Florida, and the hitchhiking guys we got out of the car with are coming back for us, we're hiding. We're hiding, and I'm praying, you know, and they have a gun, and we're praying. And they leave, and we're in a bar at 6 a.m. laughing about it. Because look what we did. Seconds and inches, Norm Alpey used to talk about, that we are the lucky ones and get to be here. That we are the lucky ones. We've buried many people, those of us that have been here a long time. And there are people that were dying when I was out there, and it was just, we'd have a toast at the bar, and too bad. Too bad for Vanna. You know, the bullet was meant for the guy next to her. Too bad for her. And that's the way I lived. I'm the little girl who was at the White House at 16. I'm the little girl who played the accordion for my father because I wanted his eye. Four children, and I wanted his eye, especially just for that. And I did that for my dad. I'm the little girl who knew God was love. I'm the little girl who could bring joy and light to my family. I'm the little girl who could paint pictures that were on the living room wall of my parents' home. And now I'm the person that they don't even know. So on August 20th, I had that moment of grace where I ended up at this church, and I thought, okay, they're going to want something from me. Here I go. Their shoe's going to drop. You know, I know it's going to drop. They're going to want my worldly possessions. They're going to want me to give my soul to something. They're going to give me the potential test and say, okay, you look pretty bad, smell bad too. Maybe you should sit in the kitchen for a while. I was ready for all that, and the guy said, welcome. At the door, and I was at my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous where my hand was raised for me, and I don't remember. I didn't remember I was at Alcoholics Anonymous, but the man at the podium hooked me. He said he always waited for the spaceship to land and say, you can come home now, Bill. Spaceship people. He hooked me. And the beautiful part about that hook is each one of us have that in us. If we're sitting here sober, we have a gift to give away. I don't understand the world. I still don't understand the world. I can't even watch, you know, National Geographic channels or something. I mean, I just can't do it. I can't watch the news. My husband used to hear me in the other room going, he said, turn off the news, let's watch Family Guy, you know, and that's what, you're watching the news again, you can't do that. My life started here with you, and my hand was raised, and the man hooked me, and each one of us have that gift to give. We've been given the gift so we can give the gift. And that I understand. That I get. Because being here a little while, I've seen it over and over and over again, and there's a room full of people that I've had the privilege to know on a gut-heart level, that I've traveled with and that I've known well, and that, I mean, for God's sakes, Bobby, we went to the Mummers Museum once, you know? I mean, life is interesting in Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're bored, you're boring. You know, I mean, get going. There's a lot to do here. So I come here, and I I can't talk and I can't do anything. And they moved me out of the liquor store, and there I am. I am really out of it. I am really out of it for a long time. And I think my brain was very scrambled, and I was very tired and very broken. And thank God you just would look at me and go, "You look tired, kid. Why don't you just take your pack off and stay with us for a while?" I kept thinking, how do they know I'm tired? How do they know I'm new? You know, it's not Tiffany perfume around me. Now it is, but it wasn't. Boy, I'll tell you. And in AA now, we, you know, it's so true. It was just recently mentioned. And I remember quite a few years ago, somebody that I sponsor came up to me at our big meeting where we look nice and we try to bring our best foot forward with meeting of tribes on Wednesday night, which is the Pacific group. I landed in that group, and I'm still there. Came up to me and said, "Oh, my God, I can smell alcohol. Someone over there has been drinking." It's like, yeah, this is Alcoholics Anonymous. But she hadn't had that experience because it had been a while. It had been a while. Get me on a crowded elevator on a Monday morning at my office building. Ooh, I love it, love it. I was really circling this girl for a while. It took me a while to even get the name out of her. She was furtive, 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 but I always caught her down getting coffee. And I haven't seen her in a while. I haven't seen her in a while. And so I love that smell. I was talking about the Tattletale, Howard. I used to love to drive by the Tattletale because you could smell it when you're driving by that old seedy bar. Because that's what I got. How do I make a decision? How do I come to that point that I actually make a decision? You came into my bar in New Orleans where I was working, bartending, drinking on the job, of course, because that's where I was working because I got kicked out of the nicer hotels. I couldn't dance anymore because I fell off the piano too many times. So I would tend bar at a local joint. One of my old carnival workers owned this bar. Yeah, I was with the carnival. That's another amends. That's forever to take. Really made my mom happy, and my dad couldn't even look at me when that happened. So there I am. There I am in Alcoholics Anonymous, and there I am making a decision because I couldn't make a decision. You come in my bar, you say, "What are you doing when you get off?" And I go, "I don't know. Something better may come along than you." You know, I couldn't even make a decision for 2 hours down the road, and now I'm on a broad highway with people I don't even know if I like. I don't even know if I'm with you. I don't even know what this is all about. I'm really tired, and I can't even go start over in Phoenix, Arizona, because I know it had north, south, east, west. It's a grid. I could find my way around in Phoenix when I was drunk. They had cold, cold bars and drive-through liquor stores, and I was like, "Get me to Phoenix, and it'll be okay." This broken jaw, broken nose, broken human being was trying to make it to Phoenix. And I was too tired to even do that. And you welcomed me, and you were happy I was there, and somebody raised my hand, and then they made me get a sponsor, and I slept on floors, and when I got a sponsor, I slept on a couch. Sponsor, life gets better. And this sponsor had me get on my knees and say a prayer, and it's like, "No, I don't know, I'm here." She said, "If you're in my house and you're sleeping on my couch, you have to say that prayer every night, on your knees." So she wrote it down for me. It was, "Thank you for all you've given me. Thank you for all you've taken away from me. Thank you for all you've left me." That's all she wanted me to say on my knees at night and then to crawl back in bed. And it was doing it because she was letting me stay there. It was doing it because I had no worth as a human being. I had nowhere to go. But I would wait for the whole house to be quiet. And then I would slide out of that borrowed sleeping bag onto the floor, which is carpeted, and put my knees on it. And I would say that prayer really quick, and I would slide back into that borrowed sleeping bag and go, "Phew, nothing happened good. Nothing happened." And I went to a lot of meetings because I had nothing else to do. I couldn't work. And there I was, reading 3 pages of this book a night. I'm just, you know, here a little while because I never stay. I never stay. I'm a runner. And Janet came up to me and she said, "Okay, you raised your hand for 30 days. That's, you admit you're powerless over alcohol. How is your life unmanageable?" So she said, "Have me write that down." And this is all I could think of was that I didn't have matching luggage when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what came out of that that brain, that scrambled up brain. I don't know I'm an alcoholic. I don't know I'm with my people yet. I do know that the spaceship people are around, so I'm digging that a little. Nobody's asking me anything because I can't talk. I end up at coffee shops where people talk about the various steps they're working. And everybody was all excited about step three. It's like, you know, I really tried to memorize those steps just because I wanted, when they talked about them, I wanted to be able to nod like I knew something. I used to sit around in New York City with Columbia Barnard people, and they would talk about these great things, and they would say, do you know that, Sherry? I go, yeah, uh-huh. I could have learned so much. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, I got sober at the second edition Big Book, and my sponsor had had me, I don't know, maybe I was a year and a half or 2 years sober, and the third edition had come out with Dr. Paul's Acceptance on page 449. But I don't have the third edition Big Book. So she told me when I really needed to read this, you need to go read about acceptance on page 449. I went home and on my second edition Big Book, it's Joe's Woes. It's about that dollar. And I'm going, he took that dollar. How is this acceptance? Now wait, and I'd read it again, and I'd read it again, and I'd read it again, and I thought, I am too stupid for AA. I do not get what they're talking about. And then I never asked, and I got a third edition Big Book, and I went, holy crowley. I was like, why don't I just ask? But the willingness, I was afraid to be willing. You talked about being safe. I remember sitting in a meeting, and I heard my sponsors laugh in the back of the room, and I realized that I was safe. I hadn't been safe in a long time. She laughed like a duck and embarrassed the heck out of me, but I could always hear quack, 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 quack. So, and she came up to me one night, she said, you're going to run, I can tell. I was just about ready to get the wires off the face and start my life as a bartender. That's what I was going to continue doing, and they didn't let me. Nobody would hire me, really. I ended up at some place called Chippendales. It was new, and I was just like, oh, I'll work here. And she said, no, you won't. She said, you know how to serve food, don't you? I said, yeah, I've done it. So you go get a job. But there I was, ready to run. And she said, I know you're ready to run. I can see it in your eyes. I thought, how does she know? Jeez, my backpack's packed. And she said, you know what? Hang on to that seat. Hang on, I want to see your hands gripping the side of the chair. So I did, I gripped it. And a couple of days later at a meeting, she came by me and she said, you're not hanging on to the seat anymore. I guess it passed. Nothing passes. We celebrate everything, life and death, good and bad. We celebrate at the bar, you know, an emotion. We celebrate, yay, you know, that's who's buying, you know. So it passed, what? What? It's like I've gotten so many tools here, how to live my life. I don't know, you talked about it last night, I don't know what a spiritual solution is much of the time. I don't know what, but I know what a spiritual action isn't. So sometimes I have to sit still and let it pass. And Jenny, my second sponsor, told me to look at the first thoughts of your day. Look at the first thoughts of your day. It used to be, oh, God, 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 God. I had to say God about 100 times to get out of bed because I was in such fear about life. And there's two people that wake up. I don't understand people like, oh, I've roomed with people. I just go, oh, yay, another day. And mine is like, okay, God, have it your way. I'm here, whatever, you know. I'm surrendered. Do with me what you want, really. You know, I mean, I'm just not... That's the way I am in the morning much of the time, but I start my day with God. But Jenny taught me a lot about God. Jenny taught me a lot about softness. Jenny taught me a lot about listening. But I had to be willing, and that willingness was there because I was tired. I started to read. You guys were telling, you were reading my mail, you were telling about stuff about me. I love being with new alcoholics and listening to new alcoholics because, oh, I drank a little, you know. And then 2 months later in the coffee shop, you think that's bad, you should have heard what I did, you know. It's like, okay, they caught alcoholism, yay. But the obsession to drink was removed, and I didn't even realize it until somebody was talking about it. I went, oh. I mean, I came out of a blackout in the Bastille, which is painted the windows black because we didn't want any sunlight coming in. In the French Quarter, it was a real local bar, and I was in a chug-a-lug contest coming out of a blackout, and I was in the finals. And I just, and we're down in green chartreuse, which is sweet and a lot of proof, out of a rock glass. And there's a big biker dude standing here, and I'm here, and they're cheering for me. It's like, oh, I don't waste booze. I'm obsessed with my alcohol. And we're chugging it down. I went, oh, my God, I think I'm going to get sick. And I did a little bit in the glass. But I knocked it back down because I'm competitive. You know? And I won. And then I was sick in the bathroom and locked the door and they couldn't get in for hours. And that's the only time I didn't drink. I love New Orleans because it was 24/7 and that's the way I live my life. Nobody took my alcohol away except when I was in jail that one time. And that's when I had those DTs. And I know I flopped around in my bed or wherever I was, or that seedy dark apartment with that air conditioning turned way up, and we would be at Augie's in the morning trying to shoot some pool. The sun is coming up and we're still drinking, and people are trying to eat SOS at the counter, and Augie's always making book in the back, and I loved it. And then I'd be sick, and then I couldn't move, and by 5 o'clock I'm starting to get well, and I walk down to the Lamplighter or Fritzl's, because I start at 6. I start tending at 6. And I would get so drunk there, sometimes I would kick everybody out and lock the door, because I found my country and western song on the jukebox for the good times, and I'm drinking gin. And you don't want that, because I am sad and sorry and nobody understands. So how do I make a decision? Janet comes to me, I'm still wired up, and she said, it's time we do the third step. And I'm still living at her house, so I know it was early on. Everybody was talking about the third step, and the third step, and the third step, and okay, make a decision, yeah, so what? Turn my will and my life over to the care of God, God's going to care about me? I don't think so. I'm a piece of crap. So we got on our knees on a Saturday afternoon on her carpet near her house with the kids home playing in the other room. The door was open. People could have looked in and said, what the heck? I'm embarrassed. I still can't talk. As I was saying, the third ship prayer like this. But she didn't care. She's just so happy. She pulled me down to my knees, and we're saying the third step prayer of the book. God, I offer myself to thee. I know about that word offer. I mean, we took offerings, you know, the mass, there was a lot of offerings. They had offerings. I mean, you're given something. You're offering. You're giving it. You're bringing it. You're laying it. We offered, you know, I love Maida. We would do a lot of offerings of flowers to Mary, and I loved offerings. I know what that means. I'm offering myself to you, oof. But it doesn't really mean that much to me. To build with me, what are we building? Do I have a foundation? Have I poured any cement? Is there anything that I could build on? Chris knows, if I was telling me about concrete, and it can't rain, and all that, and then you have to redo it. So, I mean, I just thought, oh, right, we'll just put it down, whatever it is. She was helping me build that cement, so that we could build that art, put the keystone in, the third step, the keystone that holds it all together, makes it happen, that I get to walk through a free man and woman. Build with me and do with me as thou wilt. Okay. I don't really know what that all means. What do you want from me, God? What do you want from me now? I've given up the love of my family. I've given up the man I thought I was going to marry. I've given up my dignity. What do you want from me now? Like God asked for all that? King Alcohol asked for all that. And I gave it freely because I love my alcohol. Relieve me of the bondage. Relief. I need relief. Here we go. That's my word. I need relief. My life needs relief. Bondage. I saw that happen. Not a big deal about bondage, you know. I was going to make Velcro breakaways for alcoholics that have claustrophobia. Freedom in bondage, you know. Had that moment once at a convention. I don't see. You don't want to live here. Self. Here was that word again. Self. Self-seeking. Self, self, self. Self-centered. So that I may better do whose will? Your will? What is your will for me? Be a good girl? Those days are gone. My very first conference in Palm Springs, I used to go out and get to hear Chuck and Johnny and Gloria and Mary Regan and Jimmy Ryan. And this lady Gloria spoke, she said, we're not bad girls trying to get good. We're sick girls trying to get better. And she gave me some freedom. I didn't have to be good because I couldn't be good. I didn't know how to be good. Good was too hard. I'm past good. So I better do thy will. Take away my difficulties. Yeah, please, take them away. Why? So I can help you. Really? Bear witness to those that would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. I'm supposed to be an example of God's grace. I didn't get all that then. What I got, my first third step, stood up. Wow, that was hard. She hugged me. She was about 5'1", so she just put her face right in my chest. Hugging. I'm thinking, you know, my hands are at the side. I don't like being touched yet. And I'm just about ready to fist it up to her somewhere in her head and get her off me. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, then the Saturday night meeting, Sharon hit her sponsor. You know, you were my higher power in a sense. I had to behave around here. And I just let her hug me, and then I started to feel warm and really good. And I thought, what is this? Oof, this feels good. And my first thought that came out of the annals of my brain said, I must be gay. I think I'm in love with my sponsor. I was not a rocket to 40 years of sobriety, I can tell you that day. Nobody was looking at me and go, she's going to really do a good job here in Alcoholics Anonymous and make her amends. And, you know, she's going to be able to save some souls and hook them in and continue to grow and change and be teachable. And no, nobody said that. Oh, Sharon did her third step. Oh, she looks a little different, you know. I love watching a newcomer come in and the lights are on. What happened? Oh, they shaved their mustache. Oh, they're wearing red. That looks good on him. And then, you know, Fred just did his third step. He's working on his fourth. Well, fourth step, not going there yet. But there's words in this, in the book. Being convinced. No, you couldn't convince me. Mm-mm. I was maybe briefly convinced when the right combination of everything was working. I was convinced life was going to be better and there would be hope, but I remember when Hope got up and walked out of the bar and how things changed. How drinking became darker and less feeling, and I had less feeling for the world and less feeling for myself, and I was walled up and I was isolated. That's the thing that I don't want to go back to, that being alone in the world. If you're sitting in here today and you're feeling alone in the world, grab somebody and tell them and take a log. Let them give you a log. Let them light you up. Let them help you out. There's been many times in my sobriety that, you know, there's words like admitted. I got to admit something. When I was sitting in front of that judge and the bail bondsman and the lawyer sitting there in Bogalusa, Louisiana, the carnival had left town and I was up for sales and possession. And my dad got wind of it and came into Bogalusa, Louisiana from Iowa with his checkbook, which I've made amends for. And I walked in there. I didn't walk in. I was thrown in. I was cuffed and crazy and had DTs and had cut myself all over myself. And there's my dad from Iowa sitting there. And we got to talk about it when I was 20 years sober. I said, Dad, because my sponsor wouldn't let me just go home and rip off scabs. You remember when? Well, I'm really sorry. You remember when? Well, I'm really sorry. You know, it was a long, slow healing between me and my family. Long, slow healing. So at 20 years, my dad was sitting at the end of a dock in Wisconsin on a lake and reading a book, and I went out and sat, and I said, Dad, do you remember when you had to come to Bogalusa? And, well, of course, he was sober. He had his checkbook. He was worried about his daughter. He had to get on a plane, rent a car, hire a lawyer. He just kind of laughed, and then I realized what I had said. It was like we both laughed, and we talked about it. And he said, you know, I was kind of proud of you, all you said all day long, because I wouldn't admit I am not guilty, and it is not my fault. And then somebody would ask me a question, and I would say, I am not guilty, and it is not my fault. That's what I said all day long. I never admitted anything. I don't admit. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault. Whoa. Yeah. When I started to come to an Alcoholics Anonymous in the middle of you, with you around me, it was painful. You know when you start crying and you can't stop? That's one of those stages I was at. I started crying and I couldn't stop because you had poked through the wall and let a little light in. And then you kind of handed me those spiritual tools through the little hole. Okay, here's the amends screwdriver. You got it? Good. Okay. You know, here's the third step hammer. Take it. Right? Yeah. Okay, got it. Good. Now this is what you got to do. And I couldn't get you in. I couldn't manipulate you in to do the steps for me. I couldn't manipulate you into helping me have a spiritual experience or doing it for me and then just touching me, right? The touch. Couldn't have it. You just gave me the spiritual tools, you laid them at my feet, or you pushed them through that hole in the wall and said, this is how I did it. Now try it. No. The light switch is there. No, it's not. It's dark. Something's going to bite my hand. No, it's not. Trust me, the light switch is there. No, I can't. It's move your hand a little bit to the right. All right, you've not lied to me before. I'll do it a little bit. Okay. You know, it was that tenuous for me to trust you and to get my hand on the light switch that it finally went on and there was hope again. And I wasn't alone. And I was in a room of like-minded people who drank like I drank, who had the obsession to drink like I did, who threw up in their glass and threw it back down, who drank bong wine. I mean, all of us. I mean, we all have, there's nothing that has been shocking. Nothing. Because we're all a blessing. We're all a blessing to give a blessing. So we did this third step and my life started and the wires came off and I had to start my life. And how do I do this? I worked in a place where I could get on my knees every day. And it was a bathroom that was carpeted, and there was, you know, it was just a singular bathroom. When I really needed God, because I was working for a travel agency, and I had to take all these drunken travel agents down to various parts of Mexico to show them our properties. And I'm afraid to fly. So somebody said, oh, go talk to Clancy. He flies all the time. And, you know, I had Janet for 5 years, Jenny for 5 years, and Clancy's been my sponsor the last 30 because at 10 years of sobriety when my marriage was over and Jenny smoked pot and I had to get a new sponsor and my husband was cheating on me with a newcomer, I was scared to death. And I said something to him like, I don't know if you like me. I don't know if I like you, but I need help. And he said, well, try. We've been trying for 30 years. It's been working. But I was afraid to fly. And Jenny said, go talk to Clancy. So I went, you know, I was still afraid of him because he just seemed to have that big personality. And I said, I got to fly and I'm afraid to fly. And he said, they're talking to me. He said, don't look at the wings. All right, Clancy said, don't look at the wings. So where do I get to sit? Right by the wings. I can't look at the wings. I can't. You know, and I remember that old, like, Twilight Zone with the monkey guy in the monkey suit. And I'm trying not to see something on the wings, and the wings are going like this, and they're supposed to go like this. I didn't know that, but it's like, and I would have, you know, I clutch onto everything, and these drunken travel agents, and I have to show them around, and I go back, and it was just exhausting, and I thought, okay, God will give me a sign. God will give me a sign if I'm not supposed to get on the plane. And I run out the door one day to make my flight, and I got a 12-step call from Central Office. I said, I can't. I got to make a flight. try somebody else. And I run out the door and I'm on the plane. I go, oh, crap, that was a sign. I was supposed to go on the 12 step call. Not this plane, it's going down. And something happened. Something happened. I just said, please, God, I can't do this anymore. The willingness was there to give it. To give it. Take it all. All in. And there was a seat in first class, and I thought, you know what? That's where God sits. God always sits in first class. God's on the plane with me. And there's been every once in a while I get a little, but I am everything. I let God on that plane before me. I take a deep breath, and I know that I'm fine. And I can be there to be of service and be the least disturbed person on the plane. That's what I try to do. Because everybody's disturbed. And when I can be useful and be of service to the world, I have a good day. Good attitude, good day. Bad attitude, bad day. It's that simple. Taught me that. You taught me that. You also taught me I can pray all day long and use words if necessary. I don't have to run around with these lawyers I work at and, you know, these Harvard grads and all these people that are smart and, you know, very focused. And, you know, I don't have to tell them, you know what, you're talking a little too much. This guy's not said anything. Do you think he can have a moment here? You know, I don't have to say anything. I can just, you know, my prayers are to be quiet and listen. And when it's your turn, be clear. And that's what you've taught me. I don't have to go, I'm having a little hard day. I don't have to go back Monday and say, I'm tired. Do you think I can leave half a day here? No, I have anonymity at my work. And it works for me because it's very humbling. I'm a worker among workers, and I love that. I got to show up like everybody else. I have to do my job like everybody else. I take my time when I put in for it. I don't get extra time because I'm helping others. They don't know anything. They'll say, how was your trip to Philly? I'll say, great, saw some old friends. Not about 300 new ones, but, you know. They just know my humor is a bit odd, so I don't tell jokes anymore because that, you know. You know, it's like a Quentin Tarantino movie. We're all guffawing in the movie, and all the people are looking around. Who are those sick people laughing? It's all the alcoholics in a row that went to the movie. And I love that. I love that my humor was the same as yours. So I had this God in my life, that I got this God in my life, and I've taken a lot of third steps with other people. And I'm like that first sponsor. I hug them, and I'm excited, and I'm rejuvenated, and it's alive again, and the fire's burning bright, and they're looking at me like, stop hugging me. You know, I get where they are. But there's been some experiences. I've had people change right in front of me. I've been able to listen to fifth steps with women sitting in that chair, and I watch the transformation that has nothing to do with me. I'm just a conduit. I just bring them to the chair. I'm just sharing how I work these tools, and they've got their own tools, and it's a joy to watch that wall come down. It's a joy because I know how they feel. I know how they feel because they feel reborn. This step talks about being reborn, and we're the ones that get a brand new life. Talked about last night, brand new life. I'm a brand new daughter going home to that mother. I'm a brand new daughter making financial amends to my dad. I'm responsible. He gets that check every month with a note about my life for almost 5 years. And he calls me and says, Merry Christmas. I don't want your money anymore, but don't stop sending me your notes. My dad and I healed because my sponsor shared her experience. I didn't believe it would happen, but that changed me. That changed me. So I have made that decision, and I have brought God into every single day of my life. Sometimes, not so willingly. Sometimes I'll say, move over, I'm driving. I grew up in a small town in Iowa where we had the same bus driver every year for years. Laverne Herbst. I can't remember people I went to high school with, but I remember Laverne Herbst on the bus. And he would show the first day of school, and he'd pull up on that yellow bus, and my dad would have us all with a little 8mm, and Nancy, Sharon, Sally, Miles. My brother got the cool name. He's the doctorate, you know. Nancy's the Mensa. Sally's the ponytail and the nurse in Alaska. Sharon's the alcoholic. Yay, here I am. Yeah. The only one. But we would go out in order with the calendar circled, you know, and we watched some of those videos. They were hilarious. You know, it's the glasses time. It's the curly hair time. It's the don't look at me time. It's the who cares time. I mean, it's the leave me alone time. Stop this stuff. You know, it's all of that going on all those years. But Laverne Herbst was there with the yellow bus. And we got on the bus, and my dad takes the camera, and she is Laverne, and Laverne's smiling, and there's juice in a box. There's comic books. Laverne's got a radio. There's music going on. He's got the whole big front windows. You can see everything as you're driving around. But I got to go in the back of the bus because, you know, Kenny Smichael's back there. And Bob Pospisil. And Larry Pizarik. Those are some good Czech names. They're in the back. Maybe this year they won't call me gooseneck. Maybe this year they won't put gum in my hair. Maybe this year they won't eat my food. Because that's the way I am. I go back. It's going to be different this time when nothing has changed. It's going to be different this time. But eventually I'd mic my way back up with Laverne because I wanted a comic book and some juice and a better view and a radio. And that's my God. He's driving that bus. And I sit up there. There's a heater when it's cold and there's a window open when it's hot. And God's driving and I'm safe and I get to enjoy the view. And the view is being awake. I've been awakened, and it's painful to be awake sometimes, but it's the touchstone because I rely even more on God. My dad was killed in 1999. He had a construction business. He had drag lines and loaders and big trucks, and he changed the tires, and he changed the, you know, everything, the oil, everything. He had a big shop, and I used to like love to hang out in that shop and hang on to my grandpa's little Oshkosh where the hammer goes and hear him swear and curse and drink their beer, and then they'd see me, and it was like, they'd have to behave, and it was like, darn, you know. I loved that about my dad. I loved all that. He had a big business, and then he went out April 19th, 1999 on a spring day in Iowa on a small John Deere to go down to his land and remove some equipment that had been rusted. And he hit some loose dirt on a hill and it went over on him and he was gone in a second. After almost 58 years of marriage with my mom. And when I got off that plane, Alcoholics Anonymous was there. I made my decision that morning. I knew my dad was, it was quick, it was over, it was fast. I was happy for that. I knew God was in on this. I didn't get mad at God for this. I was more concerned about my mother and my family. I was not mad at God. And what happened was when I got off the plane, AA was already in my mother's house because when I go to Iowa, I go to meetings. What happened was when my dad was laying up there in his wake and the whole town was out because it was, you know, my dad was the kind of guy people talked to. Everybody knew my dad. He did things for you. And I am upset because now I am not in a spiritual place. I had made my decision, but self got in there. Fear got in there. Fear, fear, fear. Relieve me from fear. And I went called my sponsor, who was out of the country in Africa or something when this happened, and I called my sponsor from the rectory, and I said, nobody here is being nice to me. Nobody here knows who I am. It's all about me. It's my father's wake, and it's all about me. But I use the tool I have, which is the phone, and I know my sponsor's number by heart. I hope you do. I hope it's not just speed dialing your phone. I hope you know that number by heart. And I dialed that number by heart, and Clancy didn't answer at the mission. So I called back, tell him it's me, I got to talk to him. He gets on the phone, he said, I heard what happened, I'm so sorry, I was out, I couldn't, you know, my husband sponsored, well, then my boyfriend sponsored at the time, Johnny Harris, got me on the plane, helped me out, helped me pack, really. I didn't know what to do. So I call Clancy and said, I'm sorry I was out of the country, I'm sorry this happened to your dad, and I'm crying. You know, you get somebody on the phone that you sponsor, or somebody, who is this? You know, it's like, you got to quickly get through what's going on, you know, make sure they're okay, they're not sitting in the middle of somewhere where it's dangerous, not standing on a bridge, you know, you got to kind of decipher what's going on. They're in the phone. And that's what he was getting. And I was like, I worked on this accordion number. I found my dad's accordion. And, oh, my God, I try to play Amazing Grace. I can't. It's a button accordion. I played a piano accordion. So it's like, okay. He says, all right, Sharon, you know what? You're going to be great. You're going to play that thing for your dad great. I worked on it all day long. I did buttons. There's like 8 notes to every pull with that accordion, and I worked on it all day long. I put one of my babies from Iowa in a coma. I mean, she was just like, oh, it's better. You know, we were in a closet. I'm doing it all day long. I want to play it for my dad because I know I can't talk at his wake. I want to do this. And Clancy's like, you'll be great, Sharon. Don't worry about a thing. Just play it for your dad. But I want you to do me a favor. And this is where sponsorship comes in, and they're louder than my head. This is where God talks to me through people, God with skin on. He said to me, he said, I want you to look around that church. There won't be a dry eye. They'll all be crying, but there will be a couple sobbing. Look at those people, because they're the musicians. Snap me out of me. I thought, what did he say? I was able to get out of me and get back into business of what we were doing there and to be able to be a support to my mom and my family and other people that knew and loved my dad. I was able to read something at the graveside and my mother was so happy. I was able to look at the jet streams on the day we came back to the house after his funeral. It stopped raining and the sun came out. It was one of those spring Iowa days with the clouds. I was able to take some pictures, and in one of those pictures there was a shadow of a man. We had it analyzed. I have no idea why. But I knew I had to take a picture of the jet stream. I had no idea. I just kept saying, Kathy, where's my camera? I've got to take a picture of the jet stream. And then we got distracted. And then, oh, it's over here. I got to take a picture of that jet stream. She said, okay, here's your camera. I took a picture of the jet stream on the day that we had my father's funeral. And we looking at the picture sitting on the table, and there's a shadow of a man standing back up on that hill under the jet stream. And it looked like my dad with his hands on his hips. It was a shadow of a man. I don't know where it came from, but it was gave my mother a lot of comfort. And my mother said, did you know that your dad used to like to go out and stand and watch the jet streams? I said, no. No. I am so grateful that I am awake. I am so grateful that Alcoholics Anonymous has taken me from a selfish, self-centered, self-sufficient. All I need is my bottle and my backpack. I don't need any hope anymore. I don't need any love anymore. I don't need any friends anymore. And I came in here and you said, guess what, kid? You look like you might be ready. And God gave me August 20th, 1975, to come to you, to be tired enough to sit in your midst, to be handed a set of spiritual tools so that I could let God back in my life. And 10 years of sobriety, my husband, I married, my dad walked me down the aisle. It was a great AA wedding. We had a rock and roll band. We sobered up. A couple of those guys are still sober. It's hilarious. Many years later, like 38 years later, the singer and one of the guitar players are still sober. My dad got to walk me down the aisle. I had a baby boy. My dad got to come for the christening because I sponsor a nun. And Sheila used to say, oh, come meet me at the end of Mass and we'll go have some breakfast. It's like, so I'd sneak in the back. It was a big, beautiful church in Culver City. And my son got to be christened there. But they started talking about peace and love and helping others. I was like, what? Why didn't they talk about that? You know, it's like I'm so far away from any sort of spiritual life of service. So Sheila and I would go, and Sheila was in my life, and we got remarried in the church, and then he picked the newcomer at 10 years of sobriety. I kind of went crazy. And my sponsor, I picked her up at the airport, and she had been smoking pot in Paris, didn't have 21 years. She had 21 days. I needed that day to make a decision to let God into my life and to let God have my life and to give up any sort of self-pity. But I was getting into it because you all knew that my husband was messing around and you didn't tell me, and I was betrayed, and nobody came and knocked at my door and said, guess what's happening? I had this new baby. I'm not working. My sponsor's got 21 days. That's when I went to Clancy and said, I need help with my baby in a stroller. And he said, well, try. And I was mad. I was mad because I marry for life. I am one of those loyal to a fault people that if I'm not done with you, I'm hanging on your leg all the way out the door. I am a Leo, and that's the way we are. Even when it hurts. But he left, and he wanted a divorce, and he had Jill, and then they're pregnant and married in that order. And my sponsor sees me walking with two big hot cups of coffee one night. And they're over there on a Saturday night, date night, all having fun, laughing, joking. I'm going to go see how spiritual they are with two big hot cups of coffee poured down the front of them, and I'm on my way. I am on my way, and I had gotten my hair cut Madonna white. I spiked it up, which means you can't hug me because I'll hit you with the spikes, you know? Nobody was getting near me. And I'm on my way, and Clancy happened to be at the meeting that night. He wasn't out of town, and he saw me, and he thought, okay, I think I see where she's going. He intercepted me, tucked the coffee cups out of my hand, laid it down, and grabbed my shoulders and gently made me look at him in the eyes. He says, Sharon, you'll walk through this with dignity and grace. And I was just about ready to say, I want revenge. I don't care about dignity and grace. He said, so you can be an example to others. Here we are with that third step again. Victory over them, maybe a witness to those that would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. I wasn't thinking that. So you can be an example to others. So I gave up the spare keys to my ex-husband's car because I was going to drive it to low tide in Venice Beach. I had a lot of plans. He said, I think you need to write an inventory. I wrote another inventory. I read it to him as he went to speak somewhere. I started to look at my defects of character, my side on this, because I wasn't sleeping. I wasn't eating. I was a mess. My lady friend, Pat Hodges, who was married to Clint, one of his wives, love Clint. Love Clint. Walked over my feet at the Saturday night meeting, too. I don't know if it was that night or it was right in there with the, you know, Madonna hair and all the T-shirts and the, you know, they didn't say F you, but they should have, you know. I wore a T-shirt that said My Doll. You know, that'll tell you how I'm feeling, you know. I was like, because I used to go to Cramps concerts. Yeah, that was my punker stage. Don't even ask. She walked over my feet, and she looked at me and looked at the newcomer. I knew this girl was a newcomer. She said, look at Sharon. She's got 10 years. Do you want what she's got? Ouch. Ouch. Took me right out of myself. Louder than my head. God with skin on. I had a look at me. I heard what she said. I knew that girl was a newcomer. I played volleyball with her that day. I had welcomed her to the yard, and now I'm a jerk. Whether you're watching or not, I got to do this thing because I like my head on the pillow at night. I like to know that I did the best I could today to be part of the force for good. That's all I ever wanted to be. That's why I marched in Washington. That's why I got pissed off at the world. That's why I disrupted courtrooms. The little girl who could have been anything she wanted to be, 16 at the White House, and now that's who I am. Now I want to be part of the force for good. I am not making chaos anymore. And I heard her. And I've heard people along the way. And guess what? Guess what happened with Jill and Al? Well, they got pregnant and married in that order. And this Monday night, Jill is going to give me my 40-year cake at the women's meeting. Because how they come is how they go sometimes. And he left for another one. And with her baby boy, a year and a half old, like my boy was a year and a half old when he left. She told me much later on, that she knew she could do it because she had watched me. Chuck used to say, it rains on the just and the unjust, and I don't get to judge who gets my example for fun and for free. Who am I to judge? There's enough for all of us to have happy, joyous, and free life. There's enough. I'm happy for you and you're happy. If you need something, I'll try to be there. My life, my purpose, my sane and useful life is my purpose on page 77 to fit myself to be of maximum service to God and the people about me, because I'm a blackout drinker and there are people that I will never get to make direct amends to. So I get to every day of my life walk out at lunchtime and smile at people. Walk out at lunch and just smile at people. There's a lot of God's kids out there. We don't have the lock on that. But I used to think so. I used to think, I'm only helping somebody in AA. And, you know, if I didn't know you and you want to pull out in front of me and I'm leaving a meeting and you're not in AA, move it. You know, move it. We're on a spiritual path, you know. Clancy used to talk about that spiritual smugness. You know, I am, I'm such a baby. I am just a baby in God's world, and I just, every once in a while, I get to touch the veil. I got to marry my man, Casey, after living apart for 18 years. We got married and walked down the aisle, and my dad wasn't there, but my mom, I had a call with my mom, and she said, your dad liked Casey. He got to meet him, and he would be proud. And we didn't tell anybody. We eloped, and my son walked me down the aisle, and my son was raised, too, in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, and so was Jill's boy. We raised those boys in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. We went up to Don Gates' house one weekend up in the middle of California, and he taught those boys how to play chess. You guys gave my kids, our kids, so much. And the dad is somewhere. We're not really sure. We haven't seen him in a long time. I think he's still sober. I'm not sure. I think if he was drinking, I know he was a bad drunk. But you know, my kid one day, Clancy said, you bite your tongue about his dad. You don't say anything. And I literally would bite my tongue. I had a mark in my tongue for a long time. And one day we're driving to that Catholic school where my son is now, because he got kicked out of the Lutheran school in kindergarten. I thought, oh, my God, what's happening? You know, I'm in, called my sponsor, said, take him to Sister Sheila. My son went to the Catholic school that Sister Sheila was the principal of, and he liked the discipline. He liked the uniforms. He liked all that. But we're driving there one morning, and my son looks over at me, and when his dad's going to get married to number three, and he says, my dad's a marrying fool. Out of the mouths of babes. They get it, you know? They just kind of get it. And he called me on my 40th birthday, and I said, you wouldn't be here if it wasn't for AA. You know, he said, I know. And I have a good life today. We have the gifts in here to change the world, and the gifts are to help another alcoholic where nobody else can do that, but we can do that. I can't go save the pumas. I can't, you know, I mean, I can help out and give things, but my passion, my love, my life, my energy, my heart is Alcoholics Anonymous. Because you accepted me, you took me, you changed me, you loved me. You pushed me when I needed pushing. You sat, you listened to me. You helped me through so much. My husband's death 4 years ago. I have spread his ashes all over the world. I'm not sure if he wanted that, but I think he's having a good time. We did it in Iceland, the Blue Lagoon. At the Golden Falls, we were there 1 year, my husband and I together, and so we got to go back and we got to spread his ashes with members of Alcoholics Anonymous. I did a bungee jump in New Zealand in March and let him go perfectly at the end. Perfectly. I skydived about 2 months ago, and I was strapped to a Frenchman, so it was just fine. You know, it's like, okay. They pull you in there tight, and, you know, he told me when I could let go of the ashes, and he said, I want to do that. I'm going to tell my wife, put that in my will. I want to do that. I was at the top of the Eiffel Tower at midnight. We always wanted to go to Paris, and he didn't make it. But I got to do it. And there was a piece of gold paper. It looked like a butterfly all the way at the top of the Eiffel Tower at midnight, fluttering around. It was like, what is that? And I got to put him in Australia under a beautiful gum tree with a gorgeous koala. We had been to Australia. So I took him back. God works in my life every single day. And I was walking to the bank one day, and I get this phone call, and I answer it, and it's Bob Bazans, standing under the gum tree in Australia where the ashes were put. Bob, who loved Casey, and Casey, who loved Bob. I have no choice but to give every single thing away that is in my heart. If my hands will do it, I'll do it. I'm going to leave you with this. My husband was in the treatment of malignant melanoma, and he was a great golfer. Anybody that here that ever golfed with him just knew how much he loved the game of golf. And he had given his ball to his friend Steve, who they golfed together a lot. He gave the ball with his magic marker markings on it after his last 18 rounds. Steve said, "I knew it was his last round." And my husband was always a scratch golfer. He was a good golfer. He loved the game of golf. He loved alcoholics. He loved to go out there with them. He'd come back and tell me, you know, he said it was exhausting, but I helped this person and I helped that person. He was such a teacher. He had such character. And we're sitting there at the table one morning having coffee, and he's getting one of his guys is picking him up to take him to the clinic. Because he said, "Sharon, go to work. When we have the big appointments, you come, but I don't want you in there every day with me. I'm fine. The guys are taking me. You go to work. Keep that insurance." We're practical. And we're having our coffee, and he's just kind of sitting there, and I said to him, "I don't see God in any of this." It's really kind of making me mad. I thought we were going to grow old together. And he said, kind of quietly, you know, the table is by the windows, and he said, "Sharon, look outside. Do you see the wind?" I said, "Yeah, look at it today. It's really blowing. It must be the Santa Anas." And he kind of was quiet a minute. He said, "No, Sharon, look outside. Do you see the wind?" And I thought, okay, this is a moment I want to remember. I saw Kung Fu. You know, it's Grasshopper Sensei. It's going on here a little bit, you know. He said, "Look outside. Do you see?" And he emphasized the word "see the wind." And I went, "Oof. You know what, I see what it's doing, I see things blowing around, but I can't see the wind, I can't see it." And he said, "Yeah, that's right." He said, "I go out every day and do what I can do, go to my meetings, answer my phone, and do my best with what energy I have. And I fight for my life. And sometimes I don't see God in all of this. But much like the wind, where you see the effects outside of that window, I go out every single day and I open my eyes to look for the effects of God. And we are the lucky ones because we are sitting in with miracles. I like to think everything in my life is grace. I get to sit and see miracles every single day of my life, in the rooms and out of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I know with my whole heart, which has been broken open and just flows over with my love for you, that it is back to those early days of my childhood of innocence. My innocence has come back. God is love. And Chuck was asked about 10 o'clock at night once by someone who called him. Called Chuck C on the phone and said, "Quick, Chuck, tell me about love." And Chuck said, "Well, it's the same at 8 in the morning as it is at 10:30 at night, but, you know." He said, "I don't care, tell me about love." And he said, "You're not going to like it." And the person on the other end of the phone said, "I don't care, tell me." He said, "It's not a 50-50 thing. It's not 75-25, 90-10. It's 1,000 to nothing. We love because we want to love. We love for fun and for free. It's 1,000 to nothing. And I want to tell you that this morning. I love God. And I love you. Thank you.
I get it all. Of course, I didn't do any of my notes.